Every summer, this nagging memory comes back. It always resurfaces the week school starts to get out. I remember finishing the fifth grade, a lighthearted occasion by any means. Streamers of notebook paper in the air, kids already tasting summer freedom. I was just excited for the 3-month vacation to kick off. My mom promised to pick me up like she always did because it was our little ritual. Some kids walked home that day, while others got a ride to their friends' houses. My friend Tyler and I had plans to head back to his place, as we had been counting down the days. When my teacher let us pack our things, I didn't see Tyler walking out. Huh? Where'd he go? Students hustled to meet their parents while I waited with my teacher, Mrs. Paulson, at the side doors. The crowd stretched into the parking lot, people waving, calling names in the hubbub of excitement. The air was thick, the asphalt reflecting the heat under our sneakers, and the noise chaotic, kids screaming their goodbyes for the summer. Then I heard a voice in particular.
Ryan!
A man waved from near the curb. I didn't recognize him. Sunglasses, faded ball cap, a quick smile that seemed falsely reassuring. He walked over like he knew me, like he belonged. Hey Ryan, I'm glad I caught you. Tyler's dad got held up at work, so I'll pick you up. I already talked with your mom over the phone about it. I'm Tyler's uncle, by the way. Mrs. Paulson looked at me to see if I knew who the man was. I wasn't sure, but the man gave Mrs. Paulson a casual wave, and Mrs. Paulson seemed too preoccupied to register my concern. She just nodded, giving her approval that I could leave, and turned back to the line, and just like that, let me go. I started to walk toward the parking lot, wondering why Tyler's uncle moved so quickly, scrambling to keep pace. He began talking non-stop about his old school days, how Tyler was waiting at the house, and soon, about nothing of importance. His voice had a jittery rhythm, words catching every so often, like his tongue could not keep up with his thoughts. It wasn't until we reached his car, a gray wagon with a dented bumper, that I realized something wasn't right. Tyler wasn't there. The man motioned for me to enter the vehicle as if sensing my hesitancy. I timidly stepped in. "Where's Tyler?" I could hardly manage to find my voice. He glanced at me in the rearview mirror once we pulled away. "Already home," his tone changed. "You'll see him in a few minutes." I pressed my palm against my knees, staring at the streets outside. We drove longer than expected. Everything was close in our town. The school, the park, our houses, but we started to pass houses I didn't know, and the streets felt unfamiliar. We arrived. His house looked normal enough, white siding, trimmed bushes, a quiet street. He gestured for me to come in after unlocking the door. The air changed the instant I entered the house. Dim, all the blinds pulled shut, a faint smell of mildew. Only a single lamp burned in the living room. "Tyler's downstairs," the man said, his voice smooth, almost as if automatic. "I'll go get him." He vanished down a side hallway. All I could hear were the hinges creaking, then footsteps descending. My chest tightened. I was alone with this man, and I don't think Tyler's here. I tested the front door, locked. I could feel my hands trembling at this point, and I saw it, the kitchen phone, a beige receiver bolted to the wall. I hesitated. What if he comes back? I started shaking, but I knew it was now or never. I dialed the number, shortly hearing a voice on the other end. I whispered, "Please, I've been taken. Send help." They started to respond, but I panicked the moment their voice carried in the room. I shoved the phone under a towel and hurried back before the man noticed. "Ryan," he called. "Come on down. Tyler's waiting." I didn't answer, and then his steps pounded up. He appeared in the doorway faster than expected, smiling, but his eyes betrayed his intentions. "You okay, Ryan?" "I want to go home now," I admitted, terrified. The smile vanished. His disposition changed, approaching me, grabbing my wrist, and dragging me to the basement door.
"Quiet. I'll let you go soon enough,"
he spoke in a calculated tone, trying to maintain composure despite growing signs of anger. The door slammed behind me, and a draft of cold air sent a shiver down my spine. and then I misstepped the second stair.
Ouch.
I tumbled to the bottom. Looking up, all I saw was the vague perception of the man locking the door. Tyler was nowhere to be found. I could hear every movement above me, his pacing, his muttering. I struggled to move. He approached, holding his belt in his hands. I cried at the top of my lungs, then closed my eyes to avoid seeing what would happen next. All I could hear was the descent of his footsteps. Then, three sharp rings of the doorbell. I faintly heard it. Knocking. Louder. Voices calling. The man didn't move. The bell rang again. Now, fist pounding against the door. A few seconds later, the sound of wood cracking, boots rushing inside, shouts flooding the air. The man was footsteps away from me now. He flinched for a second, assessing the situation. In a desperate attempt to escape, I bolted up the stairs, slamming against the door, screaming for help. The man would grab me any second now, but then the lock turned. A police officer pulled me out into the light. You could say just like that, it was over. Red and blue lights spilled across the quiet street. Neighbors stared from the porches. They dragged the man out in handcuffs, his head low, his face pale in the flashing sirens. My parents arrived, my mom breaking down as she held me. I didn't really have much to say. 17 summers later, I still wonder if he's out there, watching, waiting for another last day of school. Towards the end of my junior year in high school, I started to get really into graffiti. By the end of the school year, my friends and I had already tagged up all the major spots in the area. At first, we were sticking to underpasses and road signs, but one of the guys knew of a spot that had hardly been touched that looked like a lot of fun. It was the last day of school, and four of us planned to hit that spot once it got dark. During the day, I could hardly sit through those last classes. The moment the bell rang, I ran off to get all my stuff together. The spot was an old church with a preschool attached to it. It hadn't been in use for a decade, and it was set to finally be demolished. We figured it wouldn't be any harm to fuck around in there, given that the whole place wouldn't be around in a few months. I packed a backpack full of spray paint, a flashlight, and some other assorted things that I might need. Once it was nearly midnight, my friend Jake pulled up with the others in his Prius, blasting music. I threw my stuff in his trunk and got in the back. We were all riding high in that car. With summer ahead and the chance to tag a new place, I can't deny that it was a rush breaking into a church. We pulled up in the empty lot and walked up to the fence blocking off the rest of the property. Nate, another one of the guys, started to climb it, but hopped back down when he noticed the barbed wire at the top. Jake pulled a bolt cutter out of his pack, one he must have stolen from his dad, and cut through the lock. The gate creaked open, revealing the church completely destroyed by the weather. Parts of the building were smashed by falling trees. Probably some of the storms a few years back. Zach, the last of us to go through the fence, was a bit worried about going inside when it looked like the entire thing could cave in at any moment, but Jake was sure it was safe. As we walked to the main entrance, it started to rain. We ran for cover under the awning and tried to pull the door open. It wasn't chained shut, but it was still stuck. The four of us took turns trying to kick it in until I finally managed to bust it open. When we crossed into the church, I immediately felt like I was choking on dust. I shone my flashlight ahead and found the halls surprisingly clean. There was no furniture or spilled papers. The whole area had a surreal kind of stillness. Nate was already getting cold feet. Jake had to drag him inside to get us all moving along. Other than our footsteps, I could hear little paws scuttling around in the dark and squeaking that was almost like laughter. We tried every door along the hallway, but they were all locked. Jake wanted to make his mural in the main area, so we wandered the empty halls until we found the double doors to the chapel. Before we pushed them open, I heard something that froze me mid-step. Deep whispers came from behind the doors. Jake, being an idiot, had to check it out, so he cracked the door open to let us peek in. In the pews, near the front, something human-shaped kneeled over, muttering to itself. It sounded like a long, pained chant. I could barely make them out with nothing but the moonlight from the crack in the ceiling. Nate took a shaky step back or bumped into the door. The figure stopped its chanting and slowly climbed to its feet. I immediately shut the doors. Our group was ready to run for the entrance, but when we turned around, every door in the hall that we'd found locked was open, with heads peering out of the cracks. I couldn't make out any of the faces. While we were all paralyzed, Jake pointed his flashlight in their direction, but every head ducked back into the rooms before the light could touch them. The only way out was the way we came, so the four of us sprinted back down the hall towards the exit. As we passed those doors, they all opened behind us, one by one. I couldn't be sure if we were being chased, but I wasn't ready to risk it either way. It was pouring rain outside, and Nate and Zach slipped in the mud. I grabbed Nate, and Jake grabbed Zach. As I picked Nate up, I glanced back at the church and saw five figures standing under the awning like shadows. We all piled into the car and drove away. The building was demolished later that year, and I never heard anything about people living there. I'm not sure if we just ran into some junkies or crazy homeless people, but I couldn't make myself sneak into anywhere else after that night. I worked at a fast food restaurant through college so I can make ends meet. I was paying my own tuition, so I had to balance school with a full-time job. One thing that made it easier was that my coworkers were pretty helpful. Especially this guy named Daniel. Daniel was a little bit older than I was. He never went to college, so he was an assistant manager at the restaurant. I was pretty clumsy and not that good with my hands, so Daniel ended up picking up a lot of slack for me. He seemed like a decent enough guy. We weren't close, but there was a bit of small talk. The thing is, I didn't like being too close to him. It wasn't his looks, even though those didn't help. He was tall, probably 6'3". Likely at least 260 pounds. It wasn't an athletic build. Most of his weight had to be fat. He had a buzz cut and patchy facial hair that didn't do him any favors. But the real problem was that he always smelled sour. Anyway, he was gross, but I didn't. But I did owe him for how much he had helped me starting out. Summer break was coming up, and I had no plans for the first week. Some of my friends were planning a trip to Palm Springs to throw a huge party, but I wasn't feeling up to it. Day one of the break, I got a text from an unknown number. It was Daniel, which was weird, seeing as I'd never given him my number. And he was asking if I wanted to hang out. I asked him where he got my number, completely ignoring his invite, and he said he got it from the employee roster. I texted another coworker telling her about it, and she told me it was better to ignore him. Apparently, he tried to hit on a few of the girls working there and would eventually back off if I shut him down gently. I was already creeped out, so I told him I was going on a trip with my friends and that I didn't know when I'd be back. After that, I muted the conversation and forgot about it. I thought about blocking him, but I figured I might need his contact for work-related stuff. The next day, I was in the living room at night watching movies when I saw a car's headlights outside my house. They were really bright LEDs, so I went to close the window as to block them out. When I got to the window, I saw someone step out of the car onto the sidewalk. They were huge, tall, and heavy. I could immediately tell it was Daniel. I nearly dropped the remote in shock. As he approached the house, I pulled shut all of the curtains and locked the windows and doors. He must have thought nobody was home, as I didn't have a car and I lived alone. In the darkness, I watched through a crack in the curtains as he snuck up to my bedroom window and tried to slide it open. Luckily, it was locked. And after he messed with it for a while, he left. After he drove off, I turned the lights back on and rested against a wall while my heart beat out of my chest. I thought about calling the cops, but I wanted proof that he'd been there to make sure I could actually get a restraining order on him. So I decided I would get him in the act if he came back. I checked back on the conversation with Daniel that I'd muted to find dozens of new messages. At first, they were just asking why I wasn't responding, but eventually, there was a picture that was taken that night after I'd already gone to sleep. It showed me in bed between a tiny crack in the curtains.
I got actual chills just thinking about how close he'd gotten to me and what he might have done. Even though I'd been on the lookout, he told me that he knew I was hiding all along. He must have been waiting until I went to sleep and came back. Daniel told me that if I didn't respond within an hour, he'd be back, and he wouldn't stop taking pictures. Over an hour had passed since he sent that text, so I called the cops right then. A few minutes later, before the cops got there, Daniel's car pulled up in my driveway, and he marched up to my door. I filmed him through the window, and he spotted me. Daniel banged on the window and begged me to let him in. He told me that what I was doing was unfair and that I was a shallow bitch for ghosting him. I shouted at him to leave, but that only made him angrier. Daniel started to hit the window, but before he could break it, the cops finally pulled up. Daniel was only taken in for one night, but I did manage to get a restraining order. Still, I didn't feel super safe. Daniel never showed up for work again. I assumed he just left town completely, knowing I'd already told everyone what happened. After that, I got a lot more suspicious of guys when they tried to act too nice or helpful, which made it hard to get through work and school. Some part of me hopes that Daniel ends up alone forever and never tries that kind of shit again. But another part of me hopes he does, so he can end up in prison forever.